Welcome to the Other F Word Podcast with Morgan,
Sarah,
and Melissa,
where we talk about that dreaded word, failure. Join us as we explore the messy, tragic, funny, and inspiring stories that make us human. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Other F Word Podcast. We're very fortunate to have on a creator, executive producer, and really someone who has developed and expanded the transformational TV shows that we love, like The Biggest Loser, Extreme Weight Loss, and he's got an amazing book called The Big Fat Truth. Mr. J.D. Roth, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We're very lucky to talk to you. So, yeah, let's jump in here.
Yeah, maybe you can start, J.D., by telling us about your book and kind of what's behind that and your experience on all your transformational TV shows.
Well, the book's called The Big Fat Truth, and the idea behind it is, you know, when I first started in transformation television, especially in weight loss, I would call all these doctors because I had promised the network that everyone was going to lose a lot of weight. And I would call these experts in weight loss all across the country and ask them the same question. Hey, how much can somebody lose in a week? And they would all tell me the same thing, 1 to 2 pounds. So I would hang up the phone and call the next one because that wasn't the answer I needed to hear.
You know, yeah.
In television, 1 to 2 pounds a week, the show would have to be on for a decade to get real change, you know?
Right.
So I realized, and that's what this book is about, is that the doctors were really only looking at the science. Calories in versus calories out, and what was left over was weight loss. And I thought there's another way to get weight off of people, and that's to believe in them. It's to love them. It's to help them get rid of their emotional baggage so that they can be successful in what they want. Don't just make it about numbers. Make it about emotions. And in the end, I truly realized that that pain that people felt inside their stomach, it wasn't hunger pain. It was emotional pain. And once we dealt with the emotional pain, the weight fell off at a rate 5 times what the doctors told us.
Yeah, wow, you are speaking our language.
Well, I love that too, because that's for so many other aspects. That's pretty much underrides so many things, you know.
In life,
so I love
that. Not just weight loss. It's so true.
How did you come to that?
Well, I think it was just came down to good old fashioned problem solving. You know, I went back to the network executive, the guy that ran NBC, and I said, "Hey, it turns out the doctors told us they can only lose 1 to 2 pounds a week." And I'll never forget the line he said when he leaned in, got real close to me and said, "It turns out if they lose 1 to 2 pounds a week, you'll never work at this network again."
That's so supportive.
It was a moment. You know what I mean? It's like that moment where you have to say, okay, well, am I going to live in the problem or am I going to live in the solution? So I brought these people into my home and made them smoothies. I put on my running shoes and ran right next to them.
Wow.
I held them when they cried. The only way to really make it happen was to get involved. And a lot of that stuff happened off camera. But those moments that happened on camera fed the moments that happened on camera. So it ended up working in the end. But really, it was fear. And in fear, you know, you can kind of huddle in a corner and be scared, or you can take action. And I just took action and made it happen.
Wow. And you took action and made it happen, and you made these connections that propelled people to make change, right?
Well, I've learned so much in the last 15 years, and I wanted to get all of those proprietary secrets in the book. So if you don't want to expose your life on national television, which I get, then by reading the book, I can literally make you a contestant by going through the chapters of the book. And in a way, it's as if you'd been on the show. And then you can have the same change that the people on the show have, because people don't realize the process of going through getting on the show is almost as important as actually being on the show.
How so?
Well, for instance, we have you make a home tape, what's referred to as a home tape. So you have to make a tape on talking to your relatives, talking to your family, interviewing yourself. Hey, why am I overweight? And when you start looking into all these individual answers to these questions, and you ask your kids, hey, how do you see mommy? And your kids say, fat. Do you think mommy's going to be here for a long time? No, I don't think mommy is. I have to take care of mommy. And when you start dealing with those demons, you actually spend more time looking in the mirror trying to figure out how to get your life back than you do looking out the window at the view that you're never going to see. And that evaluation, that internal evaluation, brings you to the point where you're willing to open Pandora's box. And not everybody's willing to do that. And unless you go through the process, it's difficult to take those steps on your own.
So did the people on the show, and do you encourage this both on and off TV, did they get therapy? Did they get any help from a therapist, from a professional who could kind of help them delve into that stuff? Because it sounds like, I mean, to have a problem that big, so to speak, is reflective of a lot of stuff going on in your head and emotionally. So, I mean, how do you do that on your own? How do people do that?
Like you said, you know, people don't realize that the larger you get, and I'm used to dealing with people 300, 400, 500, 600 pounds, the larger you get, the more invisible you become in society. Mm. And it's the exact opposite of what you would think. Hey, the larger you get, the more people will look at you. But it's the opposite. You become invisible to everybody.
Wow.
And so there's so much emotional pain attached to that. And, you know, my advice, if you can afford a therapist and you can, you know, take the time to go talk to one, you should. And if you can't, for a lot of people that are on our show, you know, we're kind of a last resort. I refer to our shows, all of our weight loss shows, because we have a lot of them. I refer to them as the nuclear option. Mm-hmm. You know? You're choosing this, it's because you're really sick and we may be your last chance. And so it's a difficult situation, but between the trainers and myself and the rest of the staff, we do a pretty good job of diagnosing what's going on. But of course, in real life, if you're able to go get help, professional help, it's always advised.
Well, it's so interesting because your approach is a therapeutic approach. It's not just behavioral, you know, like one just lose weight. You're going deep. And that was what the book also, I was so struck by throughout. There was this thread of self-examination and deal with your emotional pain. And, you know, it's the same thing with depression. It's not just a symptom that you're dealing with. You have to go deeper. And a lot of people go into treatment. And that's really what your approach is like a really thorough treatment.
Yeah, let's be honest. You don't need me to tell you to move more and eat better.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's common sense. And someone who's depressed, you don't need me to tell you, hey, man, you should be happier.
Yeah.
That's not going to do it.
Right.
And so if you're not really willing to do the work, and remember, without a breakdown, there are no breakthroughs. It will not happen. So unless you have those emotional moments where you really unweight yourself of all the pressure that you've put on your shoulders, it'll never happen. Like, I can give you an example of for someone who's overweight. There are these loops that we have in our head, right? And they play over and over again. And you sort of start getting comfortable with accepting less in your life. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it almost makes you happy to know that you're right. So, oh, I knew I couldn't get that raise. Yeah. I knew that guy, you know, wasn't going to be my boyfriend. He would dump me. Oh, I don't deserve a good car. And you start getting comfortable with that thought process. And in the end, you know, you also get comfortable with the fact that the taste of food makes you happy. And once that loop is created where the pleasure principle is in the food and not in living your life, it's a very difficult loop to break.
Gosh, I love that.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah. I'm wondering, do you use that now? Have you now used this in other aspects of your life or in your past? Like, how does this kind of thought process affected your own life in ways? Because I would think that would just be transformational on so many levels.
Well, to solve these problems, to me, it's no different than talking to the people who work at my company or having a conversation with my wife or teaching my kids. They're all the same. And in a way, whether you're depressed or overweight or anything, there's three steps to every problem in life. Whether it's I'm hungry, I need to eat, or I'm depressed, I wish I was happy, it's the same three steps to solve it. The first step is identify the problem. Hey, I'm depressed, or hey, I'm overweight, and there's parts of my life that I've lost that I really want to get back. Step number two, okay, what do I have to do to get that back? Okay, well, I need to make better decisions. I need to move more. I need to respect, you know, the fact that I deserve this. And in the case of a depressed person, I really want to be happier. I want to wake up and be in the moment. And then step number three is the miracle step. It's the step nobody ever gets to. It's the step everyone knows they need to do.
What is it?
And lean in close.
We're
because
ready.
This is magic, okay? Step number three is do it. nothing about it and go do it.
Yeah, action.
Right. No longer talk about the fact that, oh, Monday I'm going to go on a diet. No, Monday is now. And no longer talk about, well, I really want to be happy. Fake it till you make it and start acting happy. And again, your subconscious is in control of everything in your life. And that statement, you know, your mind runs away with you. My mind runs away with me. Yeah, that's true. It's your subconscious and you're not in control of it. And you've got to get control of your subconscious and break that cycle of thought patterns. And the way to break that cycle is to go do it. And the more you do it, the better off it is. Like one example, overweight people say, well, it's terrible. I go out to dinner with all my friends and they're all having dessert and I can't have dessert. And I say, well, here's the deal. Order your dessert like everyone else. Take 2 spoonfuls of it, open up the salt shaker, and dump the salt and the pepper on the dessert and destroy it.
I love
after 2 spoonfuls. And of course, everyone says, well, what is that going to do? That's cheating. No, it's not cheating. Your subconscious doesn't know that you did that. All your subconscious knows is you didn't finish the dessert. And that's one win for you and one loss for your subconscious. And 100 wins later, you won't need to open the salt shaker and pour it on your dessert. You just won't eat it.
You just picture the taste of salt on your ice cream.
By the way,
actually
I
can be good.
It is because of you that I have that my husband, who happens to be friends with JD, he has followed this advice, and numerous times I've gone to reach for another bite of his dessert, and he's poured salt all over it. I've cursed you.
It works.
Damn it, I wanted that. It's true.
I think the pepper would make it.
I know. Unless it's caramel, and then it's salted caramel.
Right. It's pretty wicked. No,
but JD,
no.
I want to. You're sharing so many, as we call nuggets of wisdom. I just want to back up because something you said a few minutes ago, I think, is so important, and it's what we focus on a lot in these conversations. Is that without a breakdown, there's no breakthrough, and often that's what we're kind of framing as a failure, an experience of something falling apart. And our premise is that without that, there is no growth. And so it's necessary. That's why we're saying failure is necessary, breakdown is necessary. And you are really speaking to that. And then what I love is that then you're giving some concrete steps to achieving it. It's not just, you know, all theoretical. You're actually helping people do it. Like that's such a brilliant idea. Pour some shit on your ice cream, so you don't want to eat it, because sometimes mentally it's so hard.
There's 100 examples and 100 ways of things that you can do, but it's about control.
Yes.
So it all goes back to feeling like you're in control. When you feel like you're out of control, you know, hey, look, we've all been there. I've sat down with my entire sleeve of frozen thin mint cookies and told myself,
"So good,
love those frozen, especially."
I've eaten the whole sleeve.
Yeah.
So we've all been there. And we're all going to be there again and make mistakes again.
That's right.
And it's not beating yourself up over and over about it.
That's right.
And so I don't prefer the word failure. It's like the F word to me, literally.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I look at all those things as opportunities. And to me, an opportunity to learn is never a bad thing.
Right.
So, I look at obstacles as inspirations. That's kind of my deal. And obstacles to me are moments where you could fail. And you actually learn a lot more when something goes wrong. It's very easy to win. You know, it's very easy to be the man and be, you know, oh, look at me. I win again. I win. I win. I win. Anyone can do that. It's very hard to lose. Right. And you learn a lot more from that than you do from winning.
Exactly.
So how maybe you can talk a little bit about how you got to this point. How did you learn all this?
I was just wondering if you struggled with weight.
Because I know that you are wired that way, by the way. I know. I've known you long enough to know that you are that person who has just always been so positive. But I also know that you've had obstacles in your life, some big ones. So maybe you can just talk a bit about how you were able to get to this point in your life that you could see things in this way.
And teach people.
I think learning how to frame things in your life is probably the best tool you can have in your toolkit. Mm-hmm. So I've never framed anything happening to me as bad. I've always looked at it as, well, okay, I guess I have to go left instead of right, or I got to go over something or under something. I've never really looked at anything as a real obstacle that you can't overcome. It's instant reframing of things and learning how to do that so that the next time you need it, it happens automatically. And so even with my kids, you know, I use that same 3-step, scenario. It wasn't that long ago, one of my kids came home crying hysterically. I forgot I have a book report due tomorrow, hysterically crying. I'm like, okay, stop. What's step number one? I have a book report due tomorrow. Yeah, that's right. What's step number two? Well, I make a list of what I have to do. I have to read the book. I have to write about it. I have to do a title page, and I have to do a drawing of the book cover. Great. Now he's not crying anymore. He knows what he needs to do. And you say, well, what's step number three? I know what step three is, Dad. Yeah, I know. We've been through the exercise like 50 times.
I know, Dad.
Go do it. And I think once you're empowered to know what I need to do, and then here's how I have to get it done, you're no longer stuck in the quicksand of, oh my gosh, I didn't do something, in the panic of all that moment. And if you reduce the panic and those moments of emotion out of your life and you just focus on the target, then there's no way you cannot be successful.
And I mean, you're like a mini therapist in terms of just taking, you know, the reframing the emotional and calming people down and being really cognitive and thoughtful. Did someone teach this to you, or are you really just wired this way? Like who led you to this?
I mean, if I wasn't doing transformation television, I would have been a therapist, because I'm fascinated by not only the social dynamic between people, but the family dynamic.
Yes.
And that you could, I've had people literally, and I'm not exaggerating, physically and emotionally tortured by a mom or a dad, and they're 500 pounds. And you turn to them and you say, what's the one thing you want in your life more than anything? And you're expecting them to say thin and fit and healthy. And they say, I want a relationship with my dad. And you say, you mean the guy that tortured you, that physically beat you for years and years and years? Yes.
Yep, that's right.
And that hard wiring of that relationship between a parent and a child is something that's so unique. I don't think there's anything on the planet quite like it. That's, and so if I wasn't true. Doing this on TV, I definitely would be trying to figure out, you know, that from a therapy angle.
Well, yeah, you're doing it for the masses, which is amazing. Can you share a little bit with us what your parents have been like and the impact that they had on your development or your thinking?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my dad was definitely one of the more loyal people on the planet and extremely hardworking. Mm-hmm. And he never took a shortcut in anything. And I think that's part of the work ethic that I witnessed growing up. And my mom would give anything to help me fulfill, you know, whatever my passion was. You know, I started in show business when I was 11 years old, and I'll be 50 next year. So that's a long time. It's almost 40 years in the business. And without them helping me get started, you know, I wouldn't have been able to do it. So it's that support system that you need to have as a kid to get that growth. But the kids that don't have it and end up trying to figure it out on their own have a more difficult time, but it's not a hurdle that they can't get over. In the end, everybody has something. We all do. It's just with overweight people, you can see it.
Yeah.
And with depressed people, you can see that they're sad.
Right. Or you know, even the opposite, even anorexic. It's wearing their pathologies on their body.
Totally. And I'll tell you, some of the most miserable human beings I know can run a 6.5 on a treadmill for an hour. So being fit doesn't mean happy. Right. And if we can reframe, I tell these people all the time, their biggest fear in the end is that they're going to get thin and they're still going to be unhappy.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so you have to find, what I always say is, hey, if happiness is a thing, you're in trouble. If it's like, oh, when my stock account goes up, I'm happy. Oh, when, you know, I have this job, I'll be happy. Or when I get this car, I'll be happy. The reality is that only means that happiness can always be taken away from you.
Hmm. So it's you have to really evaluate.
Yeah, what makes you happy? Because if you're picking a thing, then you're in trouble because it won't always be there.
Right. Which is amazing, again, because you're really helping people go inward and look.
That's the game. I mean, the game is, you know, it's all in your mind, because if you fix the most important muscle on your body, which is your brain, your body follows. You got to keep telling your body, I want you to do this. And when it says no, you have to say you're going to do it anyway, because it's going to say no again and again and again. And it's a battle. And once you break that cycle of your body winning and or losing and your mind winning, then nothing can stop you. That's why, you know, one of my techniques when people always say, like on The Biggest Loser, oh, well, I'm not a runner. You know, I'm not built for running. I can't run. I got so tired of hearing that. One year I was like, great, you're all going to run a full marathon.
I remember that episode. Yeah, I remember that.
Executives yelled at me and the doctors threatened me and the standards and practices people said, you can't do it. And I said, oh, no, we're doing it. And I ran it with them.
Wow.
I was right off camera and ran it with them. And it set a new bar for what was possible. You could be an overweight couch potato your whole life. And in less than 6 months, you could go from not being able to walk up a flight of stairs and sleeping in your Barca lounger by the TV to running 26.2 miles.
Wow.
So it shows you it is possible. It's just a game you're playing in your head and who's going to win the game.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. You know, it seems like what you do to people, even if it's your son coming in about a homework assignment or having people run a marathon, it seems like you have them look at the stories they're telling themselves and like stop a minute from that story and let's look at what you're really saying to yourself or what you really want to say. And I think that's an amazing thing to do is just like, what stories am I telling myself? What have I created in my mind about this or that I'm not looking at? So I think that's a really powerful thing to do.
And I think, you know, reducing things in your head, it's like, I need to lose 200 pounds. Oh my gosh. No, you need to make one good decision today. And then you need to add another good decision tomorrow. And I think, you know, that metaphor of if you're running, I'm a long distance runner. So when you're running 15 miles, you can't think about the 15 mile run.
Right.
You can only really think about that light post in front of you 100 yards. Mm. And then when you get to that light post, reframe what you're going to look at next. And pretty soon you've gone 15 miles and you didn't even realize it. But when you look at the totality of losing 200 pounds or running 15 miles, you would never get out of bed.
It's too big. It's too much. Yeah.
And what about the ups and downs that people face on their journey? Because inevitably that's what happens. You have, you know, periods of time where you're like, I got this, I'm in control and, you know, I feel good. And other times where it just totally feels overwhelming and you think you're right back to square one. So how what do you tell people in those situations?
Well, don't let one moment define you is the key. And that goes for anybody. It's not what happens. It's not that one moment of I ate the Thin Mints or my kid didn't get a good grade on his test. It's what you do the second after. That's what defines you. So fall down 5 times, get up 6. I know who you are. Fall down 1 time, not get up. I also know who you are. So you have to decide what defines me. And I think that we've all been there, me with the Thin Mints. You got to pick up the phone. You got to call somebody and ask for help. You got to yell from the mountaintops because what I'm fighting is shame. People that have shame, it's over. You cannot compete with shame. Shame is LeBron James. There's no way that you can win a one-on-one against LeBron James. So you have to try and get rid of that shame. And the way to do it is be loud about it. Tell somebody, oh my God, I ate an entire sleeve of Thin Mints. Mm-hmm. What was I thinking? Because then you're pulling it out from inside and bringing it out. Mm-hmm. And when you bring that to the conscious world, you then give yourself back the permission to be in charge.
So true. Yeah. It's the classic thing that the
shame
less
shame needs quietness.
The less secrecy. The less you share
it feeds itself.
Right.
And then the room just gets darker and darker and darker. And pretty soon you can't find the switch to turn it back on.
Right. And there's the isolation and then the self-sabotage and it just keeps going. And again, what you help people to do is to connect with others, to not isolate, to share the shame and the love, it seems, that you just keep giving that.
Well, I'm a big fan of surrounding yourself with like-minded people who are all on the same mission. If you surround yourself with people who eat bacon French fries, then chances are you're going to be eating bacon French fries. And that's just the way the world works. And it's no coincidence that if you have an overweight friend, you are almost guaranteed to be overweight. And if you have an overweight relative, it's the same thing. Because when you hang around these people, misery loves company. And so that's what's going to happen. And in those weak moments, you're going to give in and you're going to be back to square one. Why do you think, you know, drug addicts come out of rehab, they end up on the same street corner. What happens? They go back to doing the drugs. And that's why I also don't like the term cheat day. It's my least favorite term on the planet. It's like, why do you need a cheat day? And in real life, when you cheat on your wife, what happens? When you cheat on a test, you fail. When you cheat on your taxes, the government comes after you. So if you're going to cheat on your health, fill in the blank.
So how do you reframe that when people want to vary from their lifestyle? Or how do you frame that for them?
Well, once you get back to where you need to be, then you can pick a window of success that you don't allow yourself to get out of. So if you're 350 pounds and you always wanted to be 199 and you get to 199, great. I would say go a little further and get to 195. And now you have a window between 195 and 199. And then you know how to tighten the screws. So when you weigh in, it's 199, tighten the screws back down to 195. Mm-hmm. That when you create one day to cheat, what happens is you start restricting during the week so you can really go off on that one day. Mm-hmm. So now you're restricting, and then what are you doing? You're binging. And right. We all know what that leads to. Yeah. Disaster. And so you can't really allow that. Do they let an alcoholic in the bar on Sundays for one day? No.
Right.
Are you allowed to do, you know, if you're a drug addict, are you allowed to do lines of coke only between noon and four on you know, Wednesday? No.
So true.
The way
so if you're a food addict, why would you allow the same thing? And so again, if you want to work your mind out like you're working your body out, these are the things you need to do to be successful. And don't recreate the wheel. Just do what works.
Right.
So simple, actually, yeah. when you describe it this way.
And also, like you say, surrounding yourself with people. I mean, having that support around you and people who can also hold you accountable. I mean, you know, a friend of mine recently started she would be upset if I called it a diet because she's trying not to call it a diet, but basically a program whereby she is trying to change her habits. And her trainer gave her an app that connects them so that whenever she eats something and has to log it, it goes directly to the trainer. And she's like, I am so much more accountable because it's not just that I'm writing it down. I know that my trainer is going to be looking at it and I can't cheat. So even if I take that one bite of a cookie, I'm going to have to log it because if I don't, I feel like I'm cheating. So it's, I guess it's part of the same psychology, isn't it?
Definitely. And that helps. And I think that helps in the beginning, as long as you don't get too used to needing that. You're trying to train yourself to be accountable. And really what I always say is you got to learn to keep your promises. Most people keep the promises to their boss, to their coworkers, to their friends. Oh, I'll help you do this, I'll help you do that. But they always forget the promises they asked and keep of themselves. So if you say, hey, I'm going to do 30 minutes on a treadmill today, you don't get off at 29 minutes and 40 seconds. You stay on it for 30 minutes because it's a slippery slope to not keeping your promises. When you say, I'm not going to eat any packaged good today, well, guess what? If you do, you're not keeping your promises. So we all need to flex that muscle to look in the mirror and have the integrity to keep the promises we set for ourselves.
Well, it's really about getting honest with yourself, right? And treating yourself so differently, not the exterior reward, but really how you feel in your body, whether it's your health or your self-esteem or, you know, if you like yourself.
Absolutely. And I always have people write small victories down in the beginning. Because they don't realize what they consider a small victory is actually huge. And one contestant who was hundreds of pounds overweight wrote one down that most people would read and just think nothing of. But for me, it completely stopped me in my tracks. And all it said was, today I tried, even though my trainer wasn't looking.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, man, what else wasn't this guy trying?
Yeah.
He wasn't being the best husband, the best worker, the best friend, the best father. And in less than a week, he started trying when no one was looking. So forget about what the scale says. Is he going to be a better husband and a better father and a better worker and a better human being? Because that's really what I'm after. Everybody wants to look better in a bikini. I get it. But the reality is, if we become better people, the rest of that stuff will follow.
Amen. And it really starts with yourself. You know, you treat yourself better. You feel like you could treat other people better. It's got 100%. To start from within.
Everybody thinks that someone's coming to rescue them. Guess what? No one's coming. Not your husband or wife, not your parents, not your friends. No one is coming to rescue you. People want to be around other people that appear to be successful. Nobody wants to be around somebody miserable and unhappy who feels alone. So if you're waiting for someone to rescue you, you will wait until the day you die. You need to rescue yourself. And when you rescue yourself, you become attractive to the rest of the world. That's just how it works.
It's so true. And yet it's such profoundly deep work. Have you found that certain people just can't do it or choose not to do it? Or have you found that most people do?
I've gotten real good at picking the ones that are going to do the work and, you know, knowing which ones are not. And people who have that victim mentality mm-hmm. are typically very difficult to help because they're stuck in always feeling like the victim. Yeah. But if everywhere you go, drama follows, who's always there? You.
Right, right.
So you got to evaluate, hey, if there's always drama, and at work, at home, in relationships, then it's you. It's not everybody else. It's not the world picking on you. Right. It's you and the decisions that you make. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those people are very hard to help until they're actually really ready to look at themselves and understand that it's them, not everybody else.
Well, I often talk about that as a therapist, that it's so much about readiness. People have to be ready and willing to change and do the really hard, difficult, uncomfortable work.
And that's part of the reason why we have them on the first day weigh in with their shirt off. It's the kiss the curve moment. It's the, hi, I'm so-and-so and I'm an alcoholic. It's admitting that things got out of whack. They went too far. And although people think, oh, well, that's a TV moment. No, that's a life moment. I would recommend people put a picture of themselves on Facebook or wear a t-shirt that says, this year I'm going to lose 100 pounds. Put it out there. When you put things like that out in the universe, you'd be amazed at how many people go, wow, that's a bold thing that person's doing. I want to stand next to that. And they'll lean in and they'll help you. It's seeing someone work hard in the dark every day in the gym, day after day, week after week, that makes you go over and introduce yourself to that person.
It's true.
Not the person who's afraid to even get on the bike and do something. So, it's the person who's in action doing something.
So getting to actually something that's very much at the crux of what we're talking about, another thing aside from shame, there's fear, which you just mentioned. It's being afraid of, you know, putting yourself out there. What maybe you can just talk a little bit about fear and what your thoughts are on that.
I mean, fear is a handicapper, you know, it's another F word, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fear. I mean, those are difficult things to overcome. And what I say, the way to reduce fear is, again, to reduce what you need to do. So fear is just an overwhelming amount of things that I need to do to get back to where I was. It'll never happen. So you don't do it. But if you can reduce it to one step, today I'm just going to walk to the end of the street and back. That's a manageable step. Or, you know, what I always tell people is, make your normal dinner plate like you always do. Eat half, put it in the refrigerator, and go for a walk. Mm. And if you get back from that walk and you still want to eat the rest of the dinner, go for it. Because that's taking the pressure off the person. Remember, right. Every diet is another word for restriction.
Right.
And nobody wants to be restricted emotionally, physically, in any way.
Right.
So if you can get rid of the restriction and give them freedom, then you can help to reduce their fear. But the only way to reduce fear, I think, is to be very loud about what you're doing. You know, fear is just like shame. It's a silent killer. And so that fear, we all have a voice in our head that tells us what to do all day long. Everybody does. And it's very, that voice is difficult. And especially for people who have depression, which, you know, more than 90% of the overweight people I work with are on some form of medication for depression.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they don't realize that the best pharmaceuticals are in their mind. You know, the best pharmaceuticals are lacing up your shoes and going for a walk and getting fresh air.
Right.
That we're all chasing dopamine. Yep. Everybody.
Yep. Yeah.
That's what we're doing. And so if that's what we're doing, then go chase it.
Yeah.
And go make that happen versus, oh, I'm going to take a pill and I'm going to get better. The pill's not going to work.
Well, again, you're breaking it down so that they're manageable steps and then realizing that you are empowered to change. It's not just getting overwhelmed and shutting down.
Yes, because everybody has been there. Thin, overweight, happy, depressed. We've all had those moments where we've been white-knuckled and overwhelmed. And you got to stop and be in the moment. And you know, I do encourage people to do some form of meditation. And you know, I think it has varying degrees of working for people depending upon how much they put into it. But that notion of not thinking about the past and not thinking even 1 minute into the future, but just thinking, well, where am I right now?
Yeah.
And look, I have trouble doing it, but I practice it. And you can meditate at a red light. You know, we all, Lord knows we all spend enough time on the freeway.
Right.
You know, yeah. you can do it. What am I going to do right now to help myself versus 1 minute from now I know is chaos or it's another red light. It's another moment of failure.
Yeah.
I think that learning to live in the moment is the most difficult thing, and the internet doesn't help us with that at all.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the meditation. I think what it helps me do, too, is also it helps me kind of stop that story. So it's kind of like, you know, it helps you realize some of those things. And I'm going to take a little side note here because I'm just curious, just in case anyone wonders, do you suggest that people, like, when they're starting a new kind of program or something to help them, do you suggest like timelines or something like that? Because I'm just curious about that. Or do you have an ending point, like you want to be here, but I know you're looking for lifelong transformation? Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like,
I mean, on a TV show, I have to draw lines in the sand with timelines, you know, because it's a TV show. But in real life, I don't want to set you up for, oh, well, I got here on this day and I didn't lose what I said I was going to lose. Therefore, screw it. I'm not going to do it. And the other thing is diets all have a start and an end. And so I don't think anyone should ever go on a diet. I think everybody should manage a lifestyle that they know works for them. And that's your lifestyle forever. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I live a whole food, plant-based lifestyle, and I know I can eat as much plants as I can fill the room with strawberries and never end up overweight. So I eat that way because I like volume of food, and I want my plate, like Sarah's husband, I want my plate piled high.
Right.
And because of that, if I pile it with stuff that has all the nutritional value in the world and none of the manufactured qualities that every packaged good has, I can eat as much as I want. And so that works for me. Everybody needs to come up with a version of what works for them, and you need to do it for the rest of your life. Hey, every now and then, I love some Thin Mint cookies like everybody else.
Yeah.
But I manage that in my lifestyle. I don't let that own me.
Well, and then so I imagine and you feel better, right? There's that mind-body connection that's so important, is that what you're actually doing can make you feel really good. And what a great result that is. Not just look good, but feel good and be more connected and empowered.
Well, you hit the nail on the head. The people I work with, there is no mind-body connection. Yeah. And that's been severed, and, you know, like two ends of a rubber band that's snapped, and the ends get as far away as possible. Those are really hard ends to reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
But once it is reconnected and you put the mind and the body back together again, you really, all I have to do is get out of the way and let them do their thing. But I think there's a lot of Americans, millions, tens of millions, walking around half dead. I mean, there are people, there's over 100 million people that are pre-diabetic, 100 million. And I just put 7 diabetics on a plant-based diet for 10 days. And in 10 days, people that have been shooting insulin for more than a decade are off all medication in 10 days. So you start thinking about the fact that that many people are drug dependent for the rest of their life, or they think they are. And yet all they have to do is eat the right food and they never have to be on a medication again. But there's no commerce in that. Nobody can make money on that. You know, there's such great support for big agriculture and, you know, dairy. And last I checked, I never heard of any you know, people backing Big Carrot.
you're going to be the guy. You are going to be
There's
the guy.
There's no lobbyists out there for, you know, big celery.
Yeah. I love that.
And big broccoli. That's a problem. And because of that, people aren't really aware that letting food be thy medicine is, you know, as powerful as it was, you know, 1,000 years ago when it was stated.
Right.
Well, you know what's just incredible is that you wrote this book, because everything that you're saying is in this book, and not everybody can be on a TV show or a reality show, but everybody could get this wisdom that you have from your book, which is so exciting, because what you're talking about is really a profound change for human beings that all should experience. It's and it can translate not just to weight loss, but, you know, other personal struggles.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking while you were talking, is I was thinking, I wonder how many of these people you've worked with who have then gone on to change other aspects of their lives, not just their eating habits. I imagine probably a lot, the ones who've been successful.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah.
If you want to lose weight, you know, any of your listeners out there want to lose weight, the first piece of advice I could give you is clean your bedroom. Mm-hmm. And people always look at me sideways and they're like, does that burn calories? And the answer is no, it doesn't. The reason I say this is most of the people I work with, their bedrooms are a disaster. There's mail piled up. There's laundry everywhere. There's, you know, the big gulp sitting next to the bed with a giant sweat mark. Wow. There's plates, food. You can't even imagine. And so my point of view is, if you wake up in the morning and the first thing your eyes see are chaos, that's just a microcosm of what's going on in your mind. So if you empty out your bedroom completely and just put a bed and a chair and a set of drawers, and that's it, nothing else in the room, you're again working your subconscious to break that loop, that negative loop that you have, and the loop starts the second you open your eyes. So if you can make that environment calming and inviting, you're already ahead of the game before your feet hit the ground in the morning. And people underestimate the power of small things like that, how they lead to change.
Oh, totally. It's profound. I love it. Yeah, it's so tangible.
Yep. So great. So much of what you say is just is so inspiring too. So really can't thank you enough, JD, for all your wisdom and just for taking the time to talk to us and sharing everything. And I mean, you'd think that we were going to get some a cut from plugging this book, but seriously, when you read it, you'll understand why. It is such a great book, The Big Fat Truth. So I would encourage Big Fat Truth. Maybe it'll teach me how to talk. I encourage people to go out and
just go clean your room, Sarah.
Yeah exactly. Yeah.
Is there other places you want people to find you, websites, or where else do you want people to?
You know, we're actually sold the book as a TV show. It's called The Big Fat Truth, just like the book. And it's going to be on a new channel that's out called Z Living. So if you go to zliving.com, you can actually read all about the show and the book and then see if you have a channel. It's in over 50 million homes on the show premiere in April. So I think that's
congratulations.
The best place. I'm also, you know, I'm on Facebook and have a presence, but I would really – you know, encourage people to look at as many avenues and opportunities as they can to affect change in their life. And, you know, I hope people can hear my voice when they read the book, and hopefully that'll encourage them to make some changes. And I think the TV show is another great opportunity for people to see other people doing what they need to do.
Yeah. So inspiring.
Love it.
Totally.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks,
JD.
All right. Have a great day.
Got it, guys. Thanks for listening and good luck.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. See you guys.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Other F Word Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast, and visit us online at theotherfwordpodcast.com. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And we'd love to hear your stories of struggle with failure. You can contact us at info@theotherfwordpodcast.com. See you next time.